The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, welcome again, and welcome for those who joined us a little later. Today, I'd like to talk a bit more about thoughts. So, it's also why I introduced that in the meditation. And thoughts seem to be with us like most of our lives. It's only maybe in deep meditation that they can sometimes be at bay for a while. And it seems kind of this incessant coming and going of thoughts, of thinking. And often we get lost in thoughts, also during our daily lives. And most of us might recognize that when we just started with meditation, that we start to see how much we're actually thinking. And we're then kind of surprised, like, wow, there's so much thinking going on. And when we start to become aware of this thinking, of the thinking mind, then we might also be able to see that some thoughts are more wholesome and others are more unwholesome. Some lead to more welfare and happiness for ourselves and others, and other thoughts lead to suffering or unsatisfactoriness for ourselves or others. And some might even be harmful. And so the Buddha offered different ways of working with thoughts. And the interesting thing is that the Buddha didn't like say, oh, we have to get rid of thoughts. And what he said was that we could start developing more and more wholesome thoughts and start to let go of unwholesome thoughts more and more. And that's what I'd like to focus on today. And the Buddha has this really, neat sutta on this subject. It's the Majjhima Nikaya number 20, the Vitakka Santana Sutta. And Vitakka means reflection or thought. And Santana means composition, nature, or form. And there's several different translations of this title. And I.B. Horner has maybe the most direct translation. He calls it the Discourse on the Forms of Thought. Forms is then Santana, and thought is Vitakka. But there are other translations which might be a bit more creative, but give a better idea of the contents of the sutta. Like Suddhaso Bhikkhu calls it the stabilization of thought. Bhikkhu Bodhi calls it the removal of distracting thoughts. And Bhikkhu Sujato calls it how to stop thinking. So we'll be looking at this sutta today. And I will share a screen in a little bit so we can look at the sutta together. And then, so like I said in the beginning, if you have any comments or questions or reflections as we go along, then please just interrupt. And then so we can look at it right away, so you don't have to hold everything till the end. If you have any things that you'd like to share. And we'll be using Suddhaso Bhikkhu's translation today, who translated it as the stabilization of thought, because I thought his language was most accessible. But sometimes I might mention other translations too for some words. And the sutta goes over five ways to deal with unwholesome thoughts. And these five ways go from kind of more of a subtle way of dealing with thoughts, and then to more coarser ways. So let me pull up the sutta. So this is the sutta. And I want to not read the gray text, only the black text. So, let's start here. Monks, there are five objects of awareness to be given attention to from time to time by a monk who is committed to developing a heightened mind. And so these are the five ways that he's going to describe. And a heightened mind basically means, a liberated mind or an awakened mind. So we're a monk, or all of us practitioners, if we want to develop awakening or even like just walk the Buddhist path, it might be useful to look at these five ways. And so the Buddha continues. Here, monks, when... Oh, by the way, I can't see you all right now. So if you do want to say something, you'll have to speak up because I won't be able to see your hand go up. So here, monks, when harmful, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, aversion, and delusion arise in a monk due to a particular object of awareness, from paying attention to a particular object of awareness, then monks, that monk is to shift his attention from that object of awareness to another object of awareness that is connected with something wholesome. And so here the Buddha describes unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, aversion, and delusion, which are the three characteristics of three roots of existence, the three roots of unwholesomeness. So all of our unwholesomeness basically comes forth out of desire, aversion, and delusion in the Buddhist way of seeing things. So it does say desire, it does say aversion, or it does say delusion. But these words don't encapsulate the actual meaning of the Pali word that's behind it. So we can basically see those as the three roots that lead to all of our unwholesome states of mind, all of our cravings, desires, all of our aversions, frustrations, hate, all of our anxiety, all of the confusion, delusion, not knowing, all these kind of mind states that we can have. So if that arises, then the Buddha says the first strategy is basically to shift our attention. And so that we shift our attention from that unwholesomeness to something that is connected with something wholesome. And like if we're really angry at our neighbor for playing loud music, then we might shift our attention to thinking about how nice our neighbor has helped us in the past, for example. So that would be a way of shifting our attention. Another very easy way to shift attention is also to start using the Brahma Viharas. So the metta, the loving kindness that we did during the meditation at the end, for example, we can start by using some phrases for some wishes for our neighbor or some wishes for ourselves, as long as it's, you know, something that's connected with something wholesome, basically. So whether it's for ourselves or another person, whatever is easy for us, we can maybe picture, a puppy or something, or a kitten, if that's easy for us. And then some wholesomeness might arise naturally because it's just so cute, right? So that's the first way of working with unwholesomeness. And of course, our thoughts, our thinking, has a lot to do with our emotions as well. So thoughts and emotions are really connected. So if we think about loud music of the neighbor, then, you know, there might be emotions arising like anger, and then that fuels into more thoughts about this neighbor or about other people. Sometimes you know, playing loud music, etc., etc. It just continues to be this interplay between thoughts and emotions. So that's good to be aware of as well, looking at how those two interact. And another thing to see here is that the Buddha is not saying we shouldn't think at all. He says, you know, think something wholesome. So that's also why I looked at that in the meditation. Like, can we recognize our unwholesome thoughts? And once we recognize them, we can start using these five ways of dealing with the unwholesomeness. And so the Buddha says, when one shifts one's attention from that object of awareness to another object of awareness that is connected with something wholesome, those harmful, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, aversion, and delusion are abandoned, and they disappear. So, yeah, when we're not thinking and those unwholesome thoughts anymore, they'll, you know, and we point our direction, our attention to the wholesome thoughts. Then the unwholesomeness connected to desire, aversion, and delusion will disappear, which is great. And then from this abandoning, the mind becomes internally stable, settled, unified, and concentrated. So it can really help us to stay balanced in our lives, to stay settled and even unified and concentrated if we practice this longer. And then the Buddha gives a nice simile. Monks, just like a skilled carpenter or carpenter's apprentice strikes away, knocks out, and does away with a coarse peg using a refined peg. So this is kind of like, yeah, this unwholesomeness is this coarse peg, and then we can strike away we can strike that away with the refined peg of wholesomeness. Which I always like these little similes, so it gives us a little bit of an image to go with what we're supposed to do. And so we'll skip this little part, and then we'll go to the second part. So monks, when that monk shifts his attention from that object of awareness to another object of awareness that is connected with something wholesome, if harmful, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, aversion, and delusion still arise, so if it doesn't work, if the first method doesn't work, it says here, then monks, that monk is to consider the disadvantages of those thoughts, thinking, these thoughts are unwholesome. These thoughts are blameworthy. These thoughts result in dissatisfaction. So if the first method doesn't work, then the Buddha offers a second method. And the disadvantages of unwholesome thoughts, to reflect on those, like the Buddha names a few ways that unwholesome thoughts might be disadvantages, which is that they are blameworthy and they result in dissatisfaction. Yeah, like they will contribute to unsatisfactoriness. They will contribute to dukkha. So if we recognize that, then the mind might naturally let go of the thought or the thought stream. Because that's kind of wisdom happening, right? So it's not something we can force, but it's like wisdom seeing, oh, wait, this is actually not as helpful. This is leading to unsatisfactoriness and dukkha. So, and then the mind might just release, which can be really interesting to see sometimes. That just realizing that can be helpful. And it's also like Sayadaw Utechaniya says, always remember that it's not you who removes craving, aversion, and delusion. Wisdom does the job, and wisdom unfolds naturally when you are continuously aware. Being aware of those thoughts will help wisdom to arise and let go of the thoughts. And so the Buddha continues with, when he considers the disadvantages of those thoughts, those harmful, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, aversion, and delusion are abandoned, and they disappear. From their abandoning, the mind becomes internally stable, settled, unified, and concentrated. So also here, so if it works, you know, then it contributes to this stable and settled mind, to unified and concentrated mind. And we can just, you know, by the way, you can just try out all these methods and see which one works for us. What works, what doesn't work. And in different situations, different strategies will work, right? Sometimes we need more of that refined pack, and sometimes we need more of a coarser method. And for this method, the Buddha gives this following simile. Monks, just like a young woman or young man who is naturally fond of adornments would be upset, humiliated, and disgusted if a snake corpse, a dog corpse, or a human corpse was tied to their neck. So these unwholesome thoughts are like these corpses around their neck, which is pretty crazy. Right? So that's how bad it is apparently to think these unwholesome thoughts, like it's like hanging a snake, a dog, or a human corpse around your neck. And so just as we obviously don't want that around our neck, we don't want unwholesome thoughts either. So yeah, this is pretty pretty interesting simile. And so that was the second one. Realizing the disadvantages. And so then the Buddha disappears. The Buddha continues. Monks, when that monk is considering the disadvantages of those thoughts, if harmful, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, aversion, and delusion still arise, so if it doesn't work, then monks, that monk is to ignore those thoughts and pay no attention to them. So if it doesn't work, we'll try to ignore. Try to not pay attention. And sometimes it might be a little hard to see, like the difference between ignoring and putting in place something different. Because when we ignore, we're always focused on something else, right? Like if we ignore, then what are we focusing on? So we'll need to kind of put our attention somewhere. Or we can just let attention go and just kind of move to the next thing and move to the next thing that might work. So this one is, the difference might be that this one might be a little less active than putting in place something different. And like we're not actively replacing the thoughts, and we're just kind of ignoring them. So this could be interesting exploration, like when can we ignore and when can we put in place something different, like it was with the first one, the first strategy. And then I'll continue a little bit to the simile, because that might give us a little bit more insight. And so the Buddha says, when he ignores those thoughts and pays no attention to them, those harmful, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, aversion, and delusion are abandoned and they disappear. From their abandoning, the mind becomes internally stable, settled, unified, and concentrated. Monks, just like a person with eyes who wants to stop seeing objects that have come into his field of view, might close his eyes or look away. And so it's like looking away or closing our eyes in a way, but then in our minds, kind of just stopping to pay attention to the thinking. Yeah, like you can maybe in our mind say stop to the thoughts and just don't engage in them. No engagement at all. Maybe we might probably have all had this experience that thoughts just keep going and just keep going and then kind of coming forth out of this desire to control or to make something happen or not happen. And then when we stop doing that, when we stop wanting to control, when we stop wanting to think, then they might just stop. So, yeah, that might be an explanation. And maybe there are more ways of looking at this, and maybe some of you have some ideas of how you would use this. So we can interrupt me, or we can look at it later, maybe, whatever. Works. And so then the fourth way. Monks, when that monk is ignoring those thoughts and paying no attention to them, if harmful, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, aversion, and delusion still arise, then monk is to pay attention to the stabilizing of the thought producers of those thoughts. So thought producers, what are that? And so it's an interesting word choice here. And here I want to bring in some other translations. I.B. Horner says that monks should not attend to the thought, function, and form of those thoughts. Bhikkhu Bodhi says he should not give attention to stilling the thought, or sorry, he should give attention to stilling the thought formation of those thoughts. And then Sujato, they should focus on stopping the formation of thoughts. So there might be different interpretations possible here of what to do here. Maybe stop thinking altogether. Maybe look at what produces the thinking. And maybe a specific emotion, like I was saying earlier. Maybe it's like anger coming up, and that would be the producer of the thought. So we can work with that anger. Or maybe we want to think to solve a problem, and this wanting to solve the problem might be the producer of the thought. And we can look at that. It's wanting to solve a problem. Or maybe just an underlying satisfactoriness with this moment. Could be a producer of the thought. So yeah, maybe we dive in a little deeper, a deeper layer. Like, why is this thought actually happening? Why is there, is it not stabilizing or going away? Maybe some stickiness, something is there that holds this thought process in place, right? So we can take a look at that.
Yeah, can I add something?
Yes, please.
Yeah, so I heard a talk. The teacher used an analogy of thought factory. I kind of liked it.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Find the factory who produces the thought. Yeah, which produces the thoughts. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, thanks. And so the Buddha continues with, when he pays attention to the stabilizing of the thought producers of those thoughts, those harmful, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, aversion, and delusion are abandoned and they disappear. And we might all have this experience, actually, that happens, right? That when we think and we become aware of, like, oh, it's actually anger fueling this thinking process, that all of a sudden, just because of seeing that clearly, it just gets abandoned. The thoughts just stop and disappear, and we can let go of the anger, or the wisdom lets go. Like Sayadaw said, like, it's wisdom that lets go of it. So this can be powerful. And then again, from the abandoning, the mind becomes internally stable, settled, unified, and concentrated. And then the Buddha continues with another simile. Monks, just like a person who is walking quickly might think, why do I walk quickly? Perhaps I should walk slowly. So he walks slowly. He might think, why do I walk slowly? Perhaps I should stand still. So he stands still. He might think, why am I standing? Perhaps I should sit down. So he sits down. He might think, why am I sitting? Perhaps I should lay down. So he lays down. In this way, monks, a person replaces coarse postures with refined postures. And so, in a way, what we're doing, if we look at the thought producers, is that we, it's this mind factory of thinking, is that we start to go deeper, and these little layers of like, oh, wait, why am I angry? Or why am I thinking, oh, there's anger. Why is there anger? Oh, I'm annoyed by the neighbor. Or why am I annoyed by the neighbor? Because I don't like music or not loud music, etc. And then we get deeper and deeper, and wisdom might arise because we see more clearly what's actually happening in the mind. That's just my interpretation, of course. This is all kind of my interpretation, I guess, but you know, there might be different interpretations possible. So the fifth way. Monks, when that monk is paying attention to the stabilizing of the thought producers of those thoughts, if harmful unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, aversion, and delusion still arise, then that monk is to clench his teeth, press his tongue against the roof of his mouth, and mentally restrain, subdue, and overpower the mind. So this one is kind of extreme, right? We're clenching our teeth, pressing the tongue against the roof of our mouth, mentally restrain, subdue, and overpower the mind. But there might be actually moments when that's needed. Like, for example, if our anger or our frustration or our anxiety or whatever it is goes kind of out of control, we might actually want to restrain, or you might want to, you know, overpower the mind. I think one of the translations is crush mind with mind. So sometimes it can be really helpful. It's like this counting to 10 advice that you sometimes get when you're really angry. Count to 10, don't do anything. You know, we really need to clench our teeth and really don't do anything. Just get through this first little bit of time until we are calmed down enough to maybe try one of the other ways of dealing with the unwholesomeness. So sometimes it can be useful to do this, I think. It might be a real helpful way of dealing with our unwholesomeness. But only in certain situations. Often it's not needed. If it's not too overwhelming, then this is overkill, of course. And so the Buddha continues. When he clenches his teeth, presses his tongue against the roof of his mouth, and mentally restrains, subdues, and overpowers the mind, those harmful, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, aversion, and delusion are abandoned and they disappear. So when we do this, we might experience that they might soften or, even disappear. Although maybe we need some other, in most situations, we might need another extra little bit of working with those thoughts once we've calmed down a little bit. And then when the abandoning works, the mind will become internally stable again. The Buddha says, settled, unified, and concentrated. And the simile is, monks, just like a strong man might grab a weaker man's head, neck, or shoulders and restrain, subdue, and overpower him. And so like a stronger part of our mind needs to come in and overpower the weaker man, so to speak, the weaker part of the mind that is angry or out of control in whatever way. And so then the Buddha goes into repeating a lot of what we've just read. And he ends with, monks, this is called a monk who is in control of all his patterns of thought. He will think whatever thought he wishes to think. He will not think whatever thought he does not wish to think. Craving has been severed. The fetters have been removed. And through the appropriate understanding of conceit, dissatisfaction has been terminated. This is what the Blessed One said. Satisfied, those monks delighted in the Blessed One's speech. And so this description is actually of a fully awakened being, someone who can think whatever thought he wishes to think or not think. You know, a fully awakened being might be able to control his mind like that. Yeah, and we might not be there yet, probably. But through our practice and with help from these strategies, we might, you know, have little steps in the right direction and a bit more agency in dealing with our thoughts. And just knowing, just this realization that we don't have to be a victim of our own thinking processes might be really helpful. Might already be like empowering us, right? And so it's also interesting that, you know, we often kind of have this approach of just letting everything be, receiving, just allowing. But the Buddha also points to this really active approach of working with thoughts, which can be really interesting to do. We don't have to kind of be a victim of our unwholesomeness in a way. We can work with it, you know, like the Buddha is saying here. And each of these five can be, you know, a skillful means in different situations. And some might appeal more to us than others. Some might be useful in some situations, some in others. And so just to summarize them, the first one is replacing the unwholesome thoughts with wholesome ones. The second method is to consider the disadvantages of the unwholesome thoughts. The third one is ignoring unwholesome thoughts. Pay no attention to them. And the fourth one is to pay attention to the stabilization of the thought producers of the unwholesome thoughts. And then the fifth method is to clench one's teeth, press the tongue against the roof of the mouth, and mentally restrain, subdue, and overpower the mind. And sometimes, you know, you could actually go through the list. Like if you have a thought, an unwholesome thought, then you just try the first method and it doesn't work. Try the second and it doesn't work, and the third, etc. And but sometimes you might actually get a sense like, oh, I don't have to even try the first method. I'll have to start with the fifth, for example. So you can just see whatever is needed in whatever situation. Yeah, so that's kind of what I wanted to say.